The government has set clear targets to decarbonise the Manx economy over the coming decades. Solar power and onshore and offshore wind look like the best available renewable energy generation prospects. But are there alternatives? Later in the programme, Graham Fox-Hume tells us that the answer lies beneath our feet, and John Shepherd talks of draconian measures introduced to help us lead better lives. But first, the Chief Minister expands on last week's comments about energy security. In your government plan, the very first sort of bold statement talks about energy security for the Isle of Man. There are three issues certainly that seem to be vexing callers to the Manon line at the moment, and those three are Kroger, the Ørsted development, and of course the onshore wind proposal. Now I must declare an interest. Obviously I may be affected by one of the sites in relation to the onshore wind, but on the other hand, of course, I pushed for years to try and get onshore wind developed. What can you tell us about those three areas of energy development?
So I think probably it is right to say that the onshore program has clearer political delineation and potential outcomes in terms of what we have determined from a policy perspective, the minimum output that we are seeking from the Manx Utilities Authority, and the need to deliver and to get on and get the island's renewable energy plans up to speed as quickly as possible, and the 2026 timeline that we'd put on to effectively bring this issue out into the open. I think, obviously, conscious of the fact that there is an exploration of sites that are going on at the moment, and conscious of the fact there is concern from various quarters about the sites that have been mentioned, and acknowledging, of course, Phil, that I will not go into personal views about sites, because as a member of the Council of Ministers, it may be at some point that I have a role to play in terms of either approving or not any recommendations that ultimately end up at the Council of Ministers. But talking about the actual overall policy, I firmly believe that we have made the right choices by bringing this issue out into the open and by determining that we must get on and deliver. I don't actually understand what we have to lose by getting the at minimum 20 megawatts. It looks like with the solar propositions as well, we'll have sort of 30 megawatts, moving towards half our annual requirements potentially from renewable energy, and why that will not actually provide added resilience for us into the future, produce good quality, relatively inexpensive electricity for people, and also help us meet our stated targets when it comes to carbon emissions. So I think it is the right policy to follow, and I think there is a pathway that is now in progress. Of course, it remains to be seen whether that timescale is maintained, and of course what happens with ultimately with site selection. The offshore renewable programme, as the Minister for the DOI, I've been looking at very closely over the summer. We are progressing now with Ørsted and continuing to discuss with Kroger their request for variation of licence. Again, it is my view that some of the governance around this needs to be tightened up. I'll be discussing that with Council in the coming couple of weeks. But we are committed to working with Ørsted to develop offshore wind. There are a number of matters that we need to overcome, including the regulation, including plans from the island for what role Treasury will play when it comes to taxation and any royalties, for example, and that's being examined at the moment. There's clarity that will be needed about access to market, because the main market will be the UK. We're not included in UK territorial sea rounds, so we need to work with Ørsted to understand more about how they plan to get their electricity into the main market. Building an offshore wind farm for the Isle of Man itself is not as it currently stands, a feasible economic proposition for the private sector or indeed for the government. So we will be committed to working with Ørsted. So those negotiations are well underway and they will be properly managed now into the to the future.
And
we've had a conversation as well with Kroger, and we are looking at determining and clarifying for them in the next couple of weeks how things should progress from there on the basis of their request to vary their license and drill an appraisal well.
And certainly the whole issue of license variation was, according to former Minister Thomas, was the reason why he's no longer a minister, because he was unwilling to make those variations that you're considering. Is that correct, or is that a misunderstanding on the former minister's part?
Well, look, I mean, I think, Chris had his own views about how things should be shaped up. They didn't necessarily correspond with perhaps some of the evidence that was available. And, as I said at the time, I think the greater issue was about the positioning of the department moving forward, and that perhaps we needed to take a breath or a pause in terms of the direction for travel and assess a number of areas. So I wouldn't just put down one critical issue. But look, I'm confident that we have proper clarity now over what is quite complex negotiations, and that these are not necessarily straightforward matters. But I think the critical issue, I think, for us in terms of our commitments is working with Ørsted, working properly professionally with Kroger, and ensuring that we do our very best to fulfil the commitments that the government has already made in terms of the licences and leases that it has issued, and that everybody is treated properly and professionally, and that we understand what the level of our commitment is and how we are best placed to go about ensuring that we give these companies the right and proper opportunities to reach a fruitful conclusion, which we all ultimately want. And particularly when it comes to offshore wind, I think it would be great if we were part of the success story of future renewable energy provision as part of a greener nation, Great Britain commitment, and we have the potential to do that, but there is complexity and there's still quite a long way to go before we could get ourselves across the line.
And I mean, the one thing I suppose about all of this that perhaps hinders the government is the lack of regulation being in place. Now, I know back in 2016 a programme was begun to actually ensure that we had regulation in place, and of course this works for both ways. It works both in terms of the developers understanding what regulatory system in which they're going to operate, but it also works for residents of the Isle of Man who may have concerns about developments. And neither the residents nor the developers at the moment have any specific clarity, because the legislation and the regulation isn't in place.
And it is a big issue. It can be overcome, and I think we can work effectively to get this regulation in place. It's not necessarily that easy, but I'm sure we can overcome that once we have clarity of sight around what we actually need to put in place. And we need to do that in conjunction with the developers, and we need to work more effectively and more efficiently together as a partnership in order to deliver on that. I think that's absolutely one critical issue where there is a lot of concern at the moment. But as I said, the other critical area of concern, particularly for the offshore wind, is making sure that we get access into these primary markets, if you like. And as it stands today, the most efficient and effective way for that to happen would be to be part of the UK commissioning rounds. But that by itself brings some areas of complications. When you look at the legislation in the UK, which only extends this these commissioning rounds to UK territorial waters, and we're trying to build a wind farm in Manx territorial waters. And these might seem small matters, but unfortunately they're very, very big, matters in political terms.
Absolutely.
And they're not easily overcome, as you might you might.
And of course, this is why the Dong development didn't go ahead back in when it was 2014-15, because there was a change in the way in which the UK supported renewable energy projects. One of the questions that people quite reasonably have is, if there's going to be an offshore wind farm, why would you, and again, I'm using charged terms, but these are terms that have been used certainly by residents opposed to wind farms. Why would you despoil the Manx countryside when you could just add on an extra 40 megawatts onto an offshore wind farm, which is going to be developed by Ørsted? Why would you not do that?
Well, I think because we don't have certainty in terms of when an offshore wind farm would be actually ultimately developed by. What we are committed to at the moment, and I think what Ørsted are committed to, is to push through the relevant consents and the planning applications. And then at that point, they will be in a position as to whether or not to determine whether they wish to invest or not. But delivering renewable energy on island presents a clear, tangible business case for us. In any case, Phil, the access, the technology is improving all the time. We know what we can achieve and deliver, and it provides security and focus for us. And it does mean that we are engaged in a process that will ultimately provide greater oversight and clarity as to what happens by the time these gas turbines effectively come to end of life. So there is more certainty about delivering onshore than there is offshore. Waiting another 3, 4 years, 5 years, possibly even up to 6 years for somebody else to make a decision could be a real blow, I would suggest, to our future energy security. I think will not do us any favours in the longer term. And frankly, we will have missed another 6 years when we could have got on and put some substance behind the energy security for the island, for the future. And let's be clear about future energy security. Yes, of course, we've always run the risk with the gas pipeline that we've been susceptible potentially to some kind of unique global event, whether that be terrorism or whether that be war or other economic potential factors that may have involved threats to that supply chain. But equally, the stability of future interconnectors, whilst we believe that the UK will meet all its targets and will have in place the necessarily infrastructure, still leaves us potentially exposed to other people's decision making. And we can provide at least that core base load, if you like, 25% or so of renewable energy on island, which gives us some additional energy security for the future, I think gives everybody confidence that we are, as an island, progressing in terms of meeting our commitments, but also that we are ensuring that the island's resilience for our future population, for future businesses, is given added weight and added substance.
Graham Fox-Hume believes geothermal energy could provide us with all our needs. Dave Quirk from the Manx Geological Survey told us on a previous programme that actually the geology of the Isle of Man is not suited to geothermal extraction. So is this just a fanciful notion that you have?
No, not at all. My background is geology as well, but I'm also a geophysicist. I worked all over the world in oil exploration. No, the point here is, of course, that the granite that we're talking about actually outcrops at the surface. I have a sample of it. And the gravity anomaly that granites cause, which, by the way, is a lower gravity field around them, but the anomaly is clearly shown on the geological map, and it indicates that it covers it's quite close to the surface over a lot of the Isle of Man. So we don't need to drill too deep to get into it. OK, it may be a bit cool, I'll go along with that, but that only controls the depth you have to drill to find the temperatures you want.
And for those who don't understand any of this, should have started perhaps with introducing the whole topic of geothermal. How does this work? I'm guessing people could understand in the likes of Iceland, where there are loads of volcanoes and things, it would be relatively easy to get heat from rocks. How would that work in the Isle of Man?
Well, the Earth's temperature naturally increases with depth. The only thing that changes is how fast or slow that increase takes as you go deeper. If it's not that hot, then you have to go deeper. But with modern drilling technologies, and there's been a breakthrough recently, which I'll come to later perhaps, but with modern drilling technologies, you can easily reach the depths required to find the temperatures you want.
So why are you effectively a lone voice on this? Why have you not managed to attract any interest from people on the island?
Well, to be honest, I have.
Excellent.
There's a society now set themselves up in Balabeg, who call themselves, I can't even remember their name now, but it's a society that wants to exploit the alternative energies for the Isle of Man. They are opposed, basically, of course, to the nonsense of wind farms and solar panels.
I suppose then that the if I were a government minister, mm-hmm. I would be listening to this and I would think, yeah, okay, that this might be a prospect, but who do I go to? How do I make this happen? You know, how much is it going to cost to actually do this? What's the risk associated?
Right. Well, there's a recent development which only came to my notice the other day. There was an article in the newspaper. There's a company called Kerify, which was going to build wind farms in North Yorkshire, onshore North Yorkshire. They realised that where they were is, of course, the Cleveland granite, which is very parallel, similar to the granite we have underneath us. They had a look at that and said, oh, that's no point in building wind farms here. Let's use geothermal. It's right here beneath us. So there is a precedent for all this, and it's coming slowly. And, of course, the United Downs project, Eden Park in Cornwall, is already using geothermal energy to generate electricity and heat the Eden Park area.
How confident are you that this could work? Because, of course, that's the thing that ministers are always a little nervous of,
yes.
Agreeing to something which effectively could be a very expensive hole in the ground.
Yes, indeed. No, I hear you. I understand that. You would have to do some form of test drilling just to make absolutely sure that the granite is where the gravity data shows it is. You know, you can make mistakes like that, I agree. But basically, just some exploratory drilling, fairly shallow, to find the top of the granite around the island and make sure it is there.
And costs of doing something like that?
I've no real idea, I have to say, but you are talking a few millions of pounds, I'm sure, to actually do a fairly comprehensive pre-survey to find out what is going on, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Assuming all of this works out, assuming we could find a company that would be willing to come and because presumably you'd need a company that knows what they're doing to come and do this, why geothermal over wind technology, which is now proven to work, solar panels, which again... proven technology, why would we go with geothermal over those?
Well, the reasons are very straightforward. Firstly, it's unlimited. There are no limitations on it in terms of weather or temperatures or any or night times or anything like that. It's there all the time once you've got it established. And once the initial costs have been expended, the ongoing costs for geothermal are minimal. You merely circulate water through one well. Nowadays, the drilling technology is so that you can just drill one hole and recirculate water through that. And it's recirculated. It doesn't use water, contrary to other misconceptions about it. So you have a permanent, and it could last for hundreds of years, literally. hundreds of years there. So once you've established it, you've got it forever, and it's very discreet. There's only a wellhead. You don't have big windmills all over the place and solar panels all over the place. And it has no impact on nature, of course, which wind farms and solar panels sadly do. I mean, they're well known for killing protected birds and all that sort of thing.
What about then the wellhead you mentioned? I mean, clearly there's no point in getting steam out of a hole in the ground if you don't have turbines to generate energy. Mm-hmm. So it's more than just a wellhead. There's presumably some sort of power generation facility required.
Yes, that could be the existing power station. You could easily start the wells or pipe the steam from just across the road on the golf course, for example. I hate to do that for the golfers, but nonetheless, that is a site that you could easily. It only takes an acre to have a few well heads, and the pipe just goes straight across the road and into a steam generator.
Hmm.
And of course, as I say, it's not wasted; it's recirculated. It goes round and round. You have a different circuit within the power station driving the generator from the circuit that brings the heat up from the subsurface.
Okay. So it seems like a bit of an obvious thing for government to be looking at, exploring. Why do you think it's not moving forward?
I really, really don't know. I really, really don't know. The whole bias at the moment in energy has been wind farms and solar panels.
Mm.
And it's just a huge mistake. These things do not provide the electricity and the security that you need.
Mm.
You know, when the sun ain't shining and the wind ain't blowing, you're not getting any sunlight and you're not getting any electricity or any wind. It's just frightening.
But presumably, I mean, if you connect to the UK grid, which is one of the proposals that's being put forward by government, I think by 2029, the MUA hopes to have a second interconnector. Surely to goodness, the load is shared around the whole grid, and somewhere in the UK it's going to be sunny or windy. You would think.
Well, you'd think yes, but where's the security in that? The problem with the point of having it here on the island, 100% available to you, is very, very seriously secure. This is my main point about all this. It's unobtrusive and it's totally secure.
What about people who, I've pondered this briefly myself. What about the people who might say, well, actually, we've. If, as most scientists believe, climate change is a man-made phenomenon based on excessive burning of fossil fuels,
mm-hmm.
And you know the science behind that is very, very strong. We've had this experiment and made a right mess of things. Now, instead of burning fossil fuels, we move to using the heat from the Earth's core. Are there no risks associated with that? That you prematurely start cooling the Earth's core, or is it?
No, to be honest, no.
Good.
The available heat in the Earth. Well, we're not down to the core. We're only down about 3,000 or 4,000, maybe 5,000 meters. But that heat is virtually unlimited. You will not make a dent in it for hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years, not
yes.
Thousands?
Well, I don't know. It could be thousands, but the experience so far in other parts of the world are that it makes no dent that you can notice within just normal time frames, shall we say. There are over 700 geothermal plants around the world, by the way.
Yeah, and I'm asking the question because I think it's a reasonable question to ask, not least because the popular view, scientific view, is the reason that Mars lost its atmosphere is because its center cooled, it stopped having a magnetic field, and the atmosphere was stripped away. And if similar happens to the planet Earth, we lose our magnetic field and the atmosphere gets stripped away. And, you know, I know we're talking probably tens, if not hundreds of thousands of years into the future, but it's always good to know about these things before we start taking risks.
Yeah, no, that just plain isn't going to happen. The Earth's build is very different to that of Mars. You know, we have a molten core here in this Earth. You will never make a dent in that amount of heat. You will never cause global cooling by extracting heat on geothermal projects. Just wouldn't happen.
And presumably, if other more reliable technologies come along in the meantime, then we don't have the problem of needing to do that anyway.
You'd be looking at the only other long-term availability of that sort of thing is atomic power, and even fusion power eventually.
Yeah,
but that's way off yet.
Well, another alternative to add to the mix then.
I would rather hope so, I must say.
Are we missing out on one of the core messages of sustainability? Only use what you need to? John Shepherd certainly thinks so. Possibly best if you tell us, in relation to sustainability, what motivates you? What is it that you do?
Well, REN Sustainable, which I'm technical director of, we're effectively sustainability consultants. I mean, but we're very right across the whole spectrum of human activity. We look at every aspect of, you know, human behaviour, human life. And we're currently involved in numerous projects to develop elements of sustainability. The most, the largest one at the moment, of course, is beginning of last year, we completed construction of two passive houses in Victoria Road in Douglas. And we've effectively now had them on test for just over a year. And to show how effective they are, our heating bill for the off-peak electric, which is the only source of energy we use in the house, for the whole year was £372.
Gosh. We've
had Chief Minister around, much of government, people, local authorities, developers and others come around and look at it, all go, oh, this is marvellous, but nothing has happened. Nothing has followed on from it.
And government has, I mean, government, oh gosh, I don't know how many years ago now, maybe a decade ago, built two passive houses. So wouldn't you have thought that, you know, that they would understand that, what this is all about?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. It was actually as a direct result of our bringing the Swedish architect Hans Ekover in 2009 to present the concept of passive to government and the island, that the houses at Janet's Corner were built. But contrary to the advice that we and Hans gave the government, they decided to build them out of masonry rather than using a modular construction format. And so the project took enormous amount of time to build. It ran over budget. I've never been able to find out how much it ran over budget by. And it was extremely difficult to achieve the airtightness and the requirements of passive. The project we've done here is actually, the design generally is based on the project that government did at Janet's Corner. Although, because of the modular timber construction system that we've used, we were able to use the whole of the structure, including the attic space, to create habitable space within the house. We've now got, potential of four bedrooms there. And most interestingly, unlike the cost of building at Janet's Corner, each of our units, including groundworks, came in at around 144,000, which is very close to the current cost, the general cost of build of that size of house, which I was told by one of the developers locally is around about 140,000. Now, this was a pilot, and we had lots of problems because, you know, with all elements, but that was part of the rationale for it, to discover just what you need to do, particularly with transport is very difficult to the island. And, I mean, we had a big problem with a lot of the windows and doors were shipped separately, and unfortunately one of the pallet got severely damaged, which cost a lot of money. So, you know, we realised that all the windows have to come direct from a factory on a single load and only be loaded at the factory and unloaded on site to avoid the potential for damage and the cost of it. But on larger projects, that wouldn't be a problem.
So then effectively, for people who don't really understand all the terminology, passive house is basically a house that you barely need to heat, isn't it?
Yes, it's very simple. I mean, it's using what's called the fabric-first approach. So the concept is you have an incredibly highly well-insulated fabric. Obviously, with many of the older houses, most of the older houses in the Isle of Man, which were designed to use open fires, which effectively was a very efficient way of heating them because it heated the whole structure. When we moved to central heating, we were then heating the air, and the structures in most of these houses became very damp because of the change, the way we changed the parameters of the way that the houses operated. And simply not thinking, right, how do we deal with the fabric of these houses to make them more energy efficient? And there are very simple things you can do. The first thing is you make sure you don't have a damp problem. You make sure your gutters and downpipes are all maintained. And potentially you can insulate externally, and you can insulate in the attics and everything else. But then the other issue is most houses throughout the British Isles rely upon natural ventilation. Now, the problem with this is that when you are naturally ventilating, what you're also doing is losing most of the energy that you put into heat the house. In excess of 50% of the energy we put into our houses is lost through natural ventilation. So if you basically make your house as airtight as possible and you put in a ventilation system which has heat recovery, which is what you have to do in passive housing, then, I mean, at the system we put in recovers over 90% of that heat that would otherwise be wasted. At the moment you have the situation where our developers and others are saying we don't know how to make the housing that we're building able to be run on electric alone and not on fossil fuels unless we put in expensive technology. But the simple reality is, when we bought the Swedish architect Hans Eke over here, we asked him to calculate what the actual U value. Now, people might not necessarily know what U value is. Effectively, the rate at which thermal energy passes through a structure, and the slower it passes through, the more energy efficient that structure is. And currently, the passive house system that is used in the British Isles is the German system, which is based on weather conditions in Scandinavia and northern Germany, where quite often through the winter it can go below minus 40 degrees centigrade. And they require a U value of 0.5 of watts a metre square Kelvin, which is incredibly low. However, what Hans worked out for the Isle of Man is if you achieve a U value of 1.5, which is massively higher than the German standard because we don't have the depth of coal that they do there, then you will achieve passive. Now, all modern houses, theoretically, are built within to have a U value of less than 1.5. So, but the problem is that you're still relying on natural ventilation. So the simple way that developers on the Isle of Man can resolve this is if they follow the way that the UK has gone in massively increasing the requirements of building regulations, where each property has to be tested for airtightness. And then they, during construction, they put in one of the simple ventilation heat recovery systems that we use, then you won't need gas and oil boilers. You can use off-peak electric. Yes, you can put in small heat pumps, because one of the big problems with heat pump development in the Isle of Man is many of the systems that were put in are much too big. And heat pumps work best when they're working hard. So if you put in a very big heat pump, they're cycling on and off all the time, which means the efficiency of them becomes very low. In fact, quite often you can reach a position where you're putting a kilowatt in and you're getting a kilowatt out, so it's a pointless operation. the best of the installers of heat pumps on the island are looking to achieve a coefficient of productivity of about around 3. So every kilowatt you put in, you get 3 out. What we're doing in our house is, the big problem with super insulated houses is effectively summer overheating. Now, when we designed the structure of our house, having great mature lime trees next to the house, we positioned it so that we could take advantage of the cool air underneath the tree during the summer. And so we're using the tilt and turn windows, allow the cool air to filter through, which has kept the temperature generally below 25 degrees. But the long-term aim we've got is that we're going to develop a lot of people don't realise, we have a chap called David Wilton who has a house in Castletown on the island. David is one of the world's specialists in heat pump and solar design. He was based in Hong Kong up until recently, but because of the whole issue with lockdown and everything else, he's now returned to the island to his house in Castletown. If we put something like a 600-watt mini heat pump on the ventilation system and use the summer overheat at very high and temperatures excess of 19-20 degrees to heat the hot water in the hot water cylinder that's currently heated by off-peak electric, we can achieve an efficiency of 5 or 6 to 1. So every kilowatt we put in, we get 5 or 6 out. Mm-hmm. And we theoretically, you could reduce the temperature internally to whatever you wanted, although it wouldn't, it'd be a bit, but you certainly can keep it most people are happy at 19 degrees. I mean, my family, the girls in my family like 24, 25 degrees all the time, and I've just had to get used to it.
But from what you're saying here, presumably every house developer in the Isle of Man must be going down the route that you're talking about, because effectively you can build the properties at about the same price as the equivalent conventional build, and the energy costs for heating the property are substantially lower. So
absolutely.
So presumably everyone's doing this now?
Well, you think they would be, but they're not. We're still, all properties built on the island, with very few exceptions, rely upon natural ventilation, which is, effectively, you'd reduce, almost overnight, if all new properties were built with a ventilation heat recovery system, it wouldn't matter what heating system you put in. You'd be using it so much less. To give you an example of this, when we applied the MEA, made them aware that we were going to put in off-peak heating, they insisted we put three-phase electric in because of the electrical requirement of three-phase an off-peak heat. And I said, hang on, no, we won't be using more than the minimum 3 kilowatt required for 3 kilowatt space heating and 3 kilowatt water heating. And they just wouldn't have it. No, you've got to put three-phase in. So we have to go to the expense of putting three-phase in. But, potentially that means that at some point, if we actually get an electric vehicle, we could put a fast charger in. But if you're driving electric vehicles on the island, there's no need to put fast chargers in, because how far can you drive on the island?
Yeah.
Off-peak charging of the vehicle is going to give you more than enough power to drive anywhere realistically in the island,
So presumably one of the... I'm trying to work out why government particularly wouldn't be wanting to jump on board with this. Is this something to do with effectively Manx utilities need to sell so much electricity so that they can afford to pay off the debt? Is it something like that they have to keep?
That is part of it. Although obviously the government paid off part of that, paid off part of that debt to sort of give them a better position. But certainly I know from meeting the MEA board some years ago that they were very averse to the concept of passive, because their desire at the time was to grow the use of electricity. Mm. But the world reality is that the fossil fuels generally that are currently being used to generate electricity are not going to get any cheaper. And in fact, they're going to become more and more expensive as time goes on and the world situation deteriorates even further than it's already deteriorated. I mean, the whole issue at the moment with Ukraine, with Russia, that is going to go on and on and on, you know. And I mean, we had the opportunity in 2014 when Putin attacked Crimea that the West should have jumped in then and done. And because we didn't, like all, you know, dictators of his ilk, you know, Putin, Hitler and all the rest of them, they see any attempt at ameliorating a situation as weakness. I mean, as I'm sure you know, Churchill said that basically you cannot compromise with dictators of that light, and if you do, they think they can walk all over you.
So what appears to be happening then is, instead of looking to see how we could reduce the amount of energy that we use, we are embracing the new technology, renewables, and moving towards renewables, and assuming that we'll just be able to use the same amount of energy as we've always used.
Is that I think it's even worse than that. I think the government, the Manx utilities, they're all anticipating that there is going to be a need for a massive increase in the amount of energy, that electricity particularly, that we generate. Whereas, you know, I mean, that the 40 million they're proposing to build on the wind turbines, if that 40 million was invested in a proper green scheme on the island to engage with every household and look at that house and say, let's start with a fabric first approach, let's look at, deal with your fabric, not get into all the expensive technology, deal with your fabric, do it as a stage process, and then assess what the actual energy needs once you've raised that house to the, you know, to the highest thermal efficiency level that you potentially can, and then take it from there. I mean, the first thing you do, with my clients, what I do, the first thing I do is when I go with them, I tell them I to buy or give them a simple humidity detector. You can buy them from Screwfix for £17. But the simplest thing is, if, you know, I say to people, do you ever get condensation running down your windows? And they, oh, yes, all the time. And I say, what that means is the humidity in your house is too high. Ideally, you should have a humidity between 40 and 70%. And that means that you don't get the growth of all sorts of, you know, molds and everything else, which have major effect on the house. But the most important thing is the simple physics, that the energy required to raise water, to evaporate water, is incredibly high. And of course, what you're doing when you've got a very damp building is every day you're heating that water, it's evaporating, going into the air. When you turn the heating off, it recondenses. Now, by simply putting in an inexpensive dehumidifier, you can, which has got possibly most of them have got about 300 watt motor, you can take 10 or 12 litres of water out of the system every day, and you'll notice within a matter of weeks that your heating bill, your heating requirement, drops and drops and drops. And that's the first thing you do. And then you look at the air tightness of your building, and then, you know, I mean, you then come to think of what could we do to deal with the requirement for ventilation without relying upon natural ventilation, i.e. opening the windows and doors. And, I mean, we work with a company in Ireland called Brookvent. I mean, they're the most innovative company in the British Isles. They design and manufacture all their own systems, and they've recently come out with one of the big problems of retrofitting ventilation heat recovery systems is getting the ducting in that you require for a full system. And you can imagine within an existing house, it's incredibly difficult. What they've done is they've come up with these 4 and 6 inch fans, which are designed to replace existing ventilation fans, but they're heat exchangers. What they've got is they've got a ceramic heat exchanger in them. They don't achieve the 90-odd percent efficiency of the full system, but they achieve an efficiency of over 80%. They're designed to work digitally together, so they you know, as the ceramic heat exchanger, the heat store becomes full, effectively reaches a certain temperature, they cycle backwards and forwards. And they are so easy to put in. You know, they cost between £150 and £300 a unit as they currently are designed. So, you know, the answer is there. That's the simple way to do it. And yet, I mean, we're working with one client in Peel at the moment with an old Peel, you know, sandstone cottage. His property was modernised about over 20 years ago, and the gas boiler is just reaching the end of its life. And we've worked out that he can put in possibly something like a 5 kilowatt heat pump, and some of these ventilation heat recovery units, and dramatically reduce his bill. He's currently applying for the Green Grant, to minimise the cost. And we're negotiating with one of the companies on the island, Nexium, who think very similarly to us. Stuart Clayton from Nexium, I was on the phone with him for 2.5 hours the other day talking about it. And he was amazed, as I think you are, you know, that why hasn't government embraced what you've done? You should have. I mean, we're not looking to build these units. We simply act as consultants. And I mean, we've already started. We've already worked with individual tradesmen and others on the island to actually get this, you know, to train them up in what needs to be done to achieve the standards you require in passive. And we've got agreements with the manufacturers of the main components that they will train. They will provide training for anybody on the island who needs it. So, you know, the potential is all there.
If you had complete control of the Isle of Man government, what are the steps that you would be taking to try and make the Isle of Man more sustainable?
Well, the first thing I'd do is dramatically change building regulations in the Isle of Man to exceed even the new building regulations that have been brought in the UK. I would also dramatically increase the ability of building control to prosecute people who ignore current regulations, and then bring in potentially the most draconian building regulations in the world to say, right, you have to build to this standard, you have to use modular systems, and effectively, this is the thing, Sweden has already done that. In Sweden, it is you have a legal responsibility to actually build your houses to a certain standard and to maintain them at that standard. If you don't, you'll get massive fines. In fact, Hans Eek, who I bought over in 2009, him and the teams he's working with have been building houses and apartment blocks in Sweden which already achieve or even exceed the requirements of carbon neutral. And yet, you know.
And people don't like words like draconian, particularly in government, but effectively what you're saying, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth here, is we are going to force you to have a home that is warm and comfortable and a lot cheaper to run than the conventional alternative.
Isn't that terrible? Isn't it terrible that we'd actually breach people's human rights to such an extent that we'd force them to live in a house that cost them virtually nothing to heat, was healthy because the air was properly filtered and changed, and so on and so forth. You know, no moles, no. That's awful, isn't it?
Final word then to the Chief Minister.
You know, our focus at the moment is pushing forward our renewable energy security plans, or our renewable energy security plans for the island. And of course, alongside that, we've clearly said that part of that is not only onshore now, but also we need to put in the additional interconnector. And of course, if we subsequently end up with offshore wind, then of course there's going to be even greater benefits to our energy security and the delivery of energy. I do not want to find, you know, I'd certainly be a failure, our failure, if we did not make any progress in this administration and then gave the next administration a 4-year window to try and make sure we're delivering proper energy security, you know, to the island for the future.
Why are we still building homes in the Isle of Man which are inefficient to heat when much better alternatives are readily available? Why is nobody looking seriously into using geothermal energy? Is the Chief Minister right in backing wind with a bit of gas? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, though, I'm Phil Gorn. Go to Mayos on Geishachrum. Thanks for listening.